You dramatized that Afrikaans accent.
Do you like it foreign?
Yeah.
Van Rooyen.
Eric Van Rooyen for birdie.
Eric Van Rooyen. Back to Van Rooyen.
Van Rooyen.
Eric Van Rooyen.
Eric Van Rooyen.
So today we have such a privilege and such an honor and what a treat for South Africans and the rest of the world to listen this morning to Eric Van Rooyen. We are so grateful to have him in the studio. Arthur, thank you for you and your team for helping us put this all together. You guys go back many, many years, even missing your wedding.
I was really hoping we wouldn't go there. Luckily, our friendship runs deep. So,
so thank you very much, Eric, for joining us.
That's
and Arthur, thank you very much for being here with me, as always, and co-hosting with me. Eric, we have you in the studio. I think we want to start by, why are you perhaps in South Africa?
Yeah.
Just give us a little bit of background.
Cool. So, first of all, it's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me. And it's great to be home in South Africa. I've been here for probably 2.5 weeks now. My wife's been here. They joined me about a week ago. And it's been great. I'm here because I'm doing a bit of rehab. So, I hurt my neck at the Open. I hurt my neck the year before at the US Open. I've hurt my low back a bunch of times. Now, it's nothing that requires surgery, so that's great, and I'm thankful for that. But the last sort of 2 years, there's been just too many niggles, and I've been advised to take some time off and do proper rehab before I start playing again.
Well, you said to me that last time you really took off was in 2017, so I want to hop onto that advice that it's probably a good idea
just to take some
time away.
Yeah.
You're joined by your wife, Rose, that's here also, and your little daughter, Valerie.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank a beautiful family,
thank
Eric.
You.
And it's so nice that they can also be here with you.
It is. It's a privilege, you know, and Rose, after we got married, we lived in South Africa for 5 years, so... second Afrikaans part, she can speak Afrikaans. So she's half South African. So she's obviously good friends with Arthur's wife, Raylan. We both really enjoy being here.
Jamie, we're just saying, you know, because of international travel and the golfers are everywhere all the time, that a lot of South African golfers also end up being married to Americans and people from the UK and all around the world.
Yeah,
I suppose it's a natural...
100%. You know, I played college golf in the US, played for University of Minnesota. I'll never forget the last thing before I boarded my plane. My mom told me, you know, moet net nie Amerikaner huis toe bring nie. And I obviously, as innocent as I was, I promised, you know, that will never happen. But I met Rose there, and we've been married for 8 years now, and you know, together for probably 12 years. So, yeah. And what's so great is she's fit so wonderfully into our family. But you're so right. With the traveling that we do, with golf being such an international sport, I think that kind of thing happens. I know Goose is married to an English lady. It's just a natural thing.
You know, Eric, and I just want to let everybody know, you're now a top 100 player, you live in America, you've got a big name and capacity, you've played on tournaments and majors that all of us can just ever dream of, but you still love the Rusks, a Biscayke that was presented to you.
Well, I'm a Boersian, so at heart, that will never change. So if I can have a Rusk with my coffee in the morning, I think that puts the biggest smile on my face, yeah.
Well, Eric, here you are now, born in 1990, you know, so you're not a very old player, you are still a young player, but I'm assuming that when it all started, you couldn't travel, you know, with people around you all the time, and now that you're a little bit more established, you can afford to bring your family with you and your team around you and still support them, but it's a journey.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but just give us a little bit of insight as to where the golf started for you and what that journey looked like a little bit. And I'm trying to inspire other people and other golfers around the world that is about to go on to this, or dads or moms that I want to their kids to pursue it, to open up that little bit. And what is that journey like to becoming a professional golfer?
You know, obviously I think that journey looks different for all of us. But we moved around quite a bit as a kid. I was in Pretoria in primary school, moved to Oudtshoorn when I was 13. And that's really where golf kind of took off for me. I think just like any Afrikaans kid, you're going to play any sports that we have at school, rugby, cricket, that whole thing. But when we moved to Oudtshoorn, golf kind of took over. You know, George is around the corner. We all know what a nice place George is with regards to golf course availability. And when I was 14, started playing for the Southern Cape junior team. And I remember vividly sitting down with my dad, and I think we had a local Southern Cape Foundation event in Plet or somewhere, and sitting down and being like, okay, well, if we're going to pursue this, rugby's kind of out. You know, I mean, I'm tall now, I'm 189, 95 kgs, but back then I was a scroll lighty, so rugby probably wasn't the route I was going to go down. So we stopped all the other sports, and golf was kind of my focus, still having my finger on my academics. My dad certainly made a point of that, that the chances of being successful at this game is so slim that what are you going to do if you throw all your eggs in one basket and golf for some reason doesn't work out? So that was always a great focus and a great balance to have. Was lucky enough to make SA team when I was 17, and got a couple scholarship offers to the US. So went that route, played for University of Minnesota for 4 years, and I was never a world beater. Dylan Fratelli certainly carried that flag, but I knew inside what I wanted to do, and I certainly pursue that with every fiber in my being. Came back home after, 2013, I finished college, came back to South Africa, started playing Sunshine Tour, and that's where I had the pleasure of meeting this chap next to me. So
I was waiting until I could just come in, you know.
And you came in as chop. Yes. Arthur.
Arthur knows the story a bit better. My memory gets a bit vague of when exactly we met, but I think our friendship really started in that tournament in Zambia, in Kitwe, where we rocked up and the hotel was shocking. And I could sleep anywhere. I could sleep on the floor if I have to, but it was in poor shape and we needed a hotel last minute. And the only thing available was a single bedroom, king size bed. And the two of us bunked up.
I think it was
up.
Even a double bed. It was a small bed.
It was small. And we bunked up that week, and that's where the friendship started. But
I think you had your first top 10 there.
I did. Maybe we need to revert back to the old ways. Sleeping on one bed. But, you know, to come back to the journey, we briefly spoke about the amount of travel before we started here, before we started recording, but you really need to love traveling and being away from home. You need to enjoy flying. You need to learn to enjoy living out of a suitcase. Otherwise, it's not cut out for you, because home right now, like I mentioned, we live in Florida full time now, but it's really a pit stop between events. For the rest of it, I'm literally living out of a suitcase, and I love it. But if you don't, then professional golf is probably not for you, because people see the tip of the iceberg. Now with LIV Golf, money is all the talk. But what goes on behind it, the sacrifices that need to be made, sometimes it's not so nice. So if you can't do that, then, you know, you probably need to do something else.
You know, Eric, and when you were younger, and thank you for sharing that journey with us, was it... So a lot of you guys were talking about bunking. You know, a lot of tour players bunk.
Yeah.
They sleep at different houses. You know, to travel is expensive just locally. Sleep in your car and do all of that behind the scenes. And that's quite inspiring for all of us to know, because we think it's this perfect journey. Mm. Resource-wise, it's an expensive thing to do.
Yes.
How did you guys manage that?
Well, I made my first cut. Oh, was it Salborne? I think a long time ago. And I made like 2,000 rand. And my dad, we're privileged enough where my dad was like, look, I'll pay your petrol and I'll pay entry fee, which I think is like 100 rand on the Sun Transfer or something like that. Maybe it's a bit more now, but I'll cover you until you start making cuts. And I made 2,000 rand that week. And I felt like the richest oak on the planet. It
was we're so we're cool. going out.
Yeah. No, I was like, petrol money for the next week. We're not going out. I'll never forget that moment because that's where it all started for me. And yeah, you know, a lot of oaks living in cars or traveling in cars and starting out sleeping in your coach's garage. There's stories like that. But I think at the end of the day, that fire that we have inside, and especially that hardship that we go through is part of the reason I think why South African golf is, so strong. I mean, we've got a hell of a lot of guys playing European Tour. I think it's just Bezzy and myself playing PGA Tour now because half the guys left for live. But, we've got more golfers in the European Tour than we've ever had. Sure, no, there's no Ernie, there's no Goose, at least not yet.
Yeah.
You know, they dominated, but I think golf in South Africa, professional golf, is really healthy because we had to go through stuff like that. It's not easy to travel. It's not nice when you have to sleep in your car, but you learn to grow a thick skin when you have to go through those things, and that's key.
And don't you think that one of the things that almost scares me when you talk about it is that you need to not just love the journey, mm-hmm. love the traveling that goes with it and really, really love it. But you also need to become a good traveling golfer mm. based on climate, air, mm. air thickness, mm. you know, different
altitudes,
yeah. different time zones and mm-hmm. systems. So you might not feel the best of your
sure. you know,
the first day that you start or the first practice round. So you need to become very good in that. Mm-hmm. Is that something over time you learned or mindset?
Both. You know, positive mindset's everything, right? But yeah, the travel aspect, the different foods, like you travel to China and you don't know, is this chicken I'm eating?
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
It looks a little funky.
Yeah, but it's reality.
But it's a reality. And that stuff you learn, how to deal with the time changes. You know, the Americans have it easy. They play at home. There's a Starbucks around every corner. They're never out of their comfort zones and, you know, pour them in at the British Open and they struggle. Look at Oak, like, you know, Justin Thomas, phenomenal player, but he's never done well at the Open Championship and I'd wonder why. So, yeah, as a South African, we have to learn to travel if you want to play European Tour or I guess DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. But that comes with it, and you learn how to handle the time zones. You learn how to be away from home, and me personally, I love it.
Now, Eric, you talk about the sacrifices, and what we see about you, and in most cases, is the best shots. Mm. You know, that's what the TV shows us. But there's a hole behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and that's the training capacity. Mm-hmm. So somebody, you know, that in business you call it 10,000 hours, mm-hmm. which is also translated into sport.
Sure.
I see on the Formula One as an example, world champions are becoming younger.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke now about the South African health of professional players around the field. I don't think it's ever had so many players mm. traveling around the world and playing on the field. Am I right in saying that?
On all tours, look at the Asian tour.
Yes.
Oh, well. Same thing, yeah.
But why?
I think, I mean, the Sunshine Tour is also very strong. The players mm. are very good. I mean, most professional golfers are pretty good. It's just using the opportunity well, I think. And the Sunshine Tour is also a brutal tour to travel to because you'll play one event in Zambia, then you'll go to Cape Town, then you'll go to Zim. So I think they get used to the travel part. I know it's not massive different time zones, mm-hmm. but traveling from a Zim to Cape Town or Zambia to Durban is not an easy travel.
Yeah.
Because it's not just one connecting flight and you're there type of thing. So... and I think South Africans are also quite tough.
100%.
like we were chatted on the previous podcast, South Africans are generally, they've got good genes, they're quite strong. A lot of the big hitters on tour are South African as well.
And I think you see that in all kinds of sports, not just the golf.
Yeah.
Look at rugby.
Yeah.
So I think we are made hard through tough times as well. I mean, go through the South African history as well. I mean, had to go through some challenging times as well. So,
and every time I feel like as a nation, we come out stronger. And, you know, in order to grow a thick skin, you have to go through adversity. In order to be tough, you have to go through hardship. It doesn't just happen. I don't know how to be tough when I'm a kid. You have to fall over a bunch of times. You know, I've got a 13-month baby now. She falls over, she cries, she stands up, she does it again. But the only way you get tough is to go through those hard times. And as South Africans, a lot of us live that daily. And I think that's part of our makeup, why are we successful.
And I think also a lot of the guys on the South African tour, they make a lot of friends when they play on the tour. So they surround themselves with their friends and they, you know, make themselves comfortable and they hang around in their groups of friends. And, you know, that does make it a lot easier. I mean, when we travel together, we, you know, it was 100%, great.
Yeah.
So when one was having a bad day, the other one was there to, you know, lift up, or, you know, something doesn't feel good, let's just have a look at it quickly type of a thing. We were there to help. And, you know, I think that does play a big part in that as well, because
we've got the support.
We've all got one goal, but we're also there to lift each other or help each other or be there, you know, whether it's mentally or not. So I think that's also very crucial, what people don't speak about.
So it's almost like you need to change your mindset to say, this is something I want to go through, because it builds the foundation blocks in friendships, sponsorships, you know, coaches, and networks around the world, which is vitally important in golf as well. Eric, and you're such a humble guy. How do you manage all of that?
Sure. I think the humble part probably comes from my upbringing with my mom and dad, to be honest. You've got golfers that aren't humble, and I think that's, it's with any people from in any industry, you know, you've got people from all walks of life. But managing that, again, that's just through experience. Obviously, I didn't start out as, say, a Rory McIlroy, where you were 19 and you were one of the best players in the world. My journey has certainly been one of starting on the Sunshine Tour and building my way up to where I am now. So I think through that process, as my success has grown, I've learned how to adapt with that, how to have people around me that help with certain things. So it's really just through experience.
And what type of player would you say you were? You get a player that can play PlayStation for the day and shoot a brilliant round the afternoon. Then you get a player that puts in all the days and the time and the hours, and he simply doesn't have that natural ability. Where do you fall as a player?
I think when it comes to natural ability, I think I'll let other people sort of be the judge of that. But I'm the type of guy that I don't really leave one stone unturned. I think the chances of being successful at this game is so slim, and the competition is getting deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, things like FlightScope is available to us. So the coaching's getting better. People understand how the golf swing works from a physical perspective, how the body's supposed to function. Kids have that information now at an earlier age. So it's getting tougher and tougher to win out there. And for me, I've just always looked at it like, hell man, if I'm not going to put my best foot forward every single time, if I'm in the gym and I'm kind of loafing around, or if I'm going out every single night, because there's oaks that do that. There's guys I know in the Santra Tour that love a Brandes and Coke. And look, Picked that's up. Fine. Yeah. That's not how I tick. So I've certainly been the one that I love the grind. I love the graft. And I truly think that I want to just give myself the best opportunity to succeed. I don't one day want to sit back and be like, sure, if I just trained a bit harder those 2 years during rehab, I might have achieved something truly special. I want to be able to put it in and then say, hey, it didn't work out, or it did work out. That's me.
I think from my side, being around him, playing on tour, I mean, he did it the right way. You know, when he was on the range, he practiced with a purpose. When he felt like he wasn't mentally on point, he used to work on it. Mm-hmm. So
going I got back, people to help me with it.
People,
yeah.
Okay. People to help him. So he did it as a job, you know, and there are guys with natural ability that just go hit balls on the range because they say they did it and they practice for 2 hours and they got the job done. But with Eric, he did everything with a purpose. And I think he also, every day, he got 1% better at something, you know. And if you take 100 days and improve in 1% at a time, you're going to improve 100% in 100 days.
Yeah.
He was never lazy. His job came first over everything. And he took it seriously. If I compared myself to him, when I was playing on tour, we used to play practice rounds or social rounds, and it would, you know, I would win the money, he would win the money. There wasn't much of a difference. Mm-mm. But the way he did it mentally, you know, the practice with a purpose was just on another level. And unfortunately, I didn't like traveling. I hated that. So I didn't tick the box for that. But for me, it was reality. You know, as friends, though, I had to be realistic, and I compared myself to him. Ability at that time was probably much of a muchness, but he got the job done when he needed to, and he made it his everything. You know, like for me, if I wasn't Liz sometimes, I just wouldn't do it. Where Eric would man up, do what he needs to do, practice with a purpose, and, you know, tick everything off. And I think that's why he's there today, because he did it properly, and he, you know, did everything he could to get him to that point.
Mm-hmm. It's vital that we just mentioned that, because I think people forget the hard work that needs to go into it and the dedication that you need to have towards it. And you can see from early signs that there was going to be a separator here. Mm. You know, the way that he tackled everything. And you said something there about the mental game. That was quite an early stage. So did you, from an early stage, start the mental game being so important? Because as amateurs, we feel everybody's got the skill. Let's say the top 130.
Sure.
They've all got the swing. But the separator is the mind.
Mm.
Is that like that, Eric, in a professional capacity?
100%. Yeah, it's the same thing. The ability to deal with adversity. The ability to not get fazed by Tiger Woods warming up next to you on the range.
Yeah.
A lot of those things you learn through experience, and you can't get taught that. But at the same time, there's no substitute for being absolutely sound upstairs. And luckily, there's people that can help you with that. I don't go see a psychologist because I'm mull. I'm seeing a psychologist to help me get the absolute best out of me, to squeeze all the juice out the lemon.
Yeah.
And that's the separator at the end of the day.
So one of the messages then to the youngsters, you know, lady, woman, man, that is pursuing golf, that has got some support behind them, unless you're prepared to take these type of sacrifices, unless you're prepared to put these heart of heart, then that's a determination you need to do very early on.
I think so. And you know, yeah, there have been sacrifices. There have been times where it wasn't so lekker.
Yeah.
But most of the time, this is what I wanted to do. I chose not going to play the rage.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to play golf. If you rather want to go to play the rage, go.
Yeah.
And like, don't get me wrong, there's times where I party.
Yeah.
You know, we go out with mates. But yeah, Chomi, if I've got the British Open coming up in two weeks, that's gonna wait.
Yeah.
And we'll party when I lift the trophy.
Yeah.
A lot of those sacrifices, you know, if it hangs like a dark cloud over your head that this is so hard because I've got to miss this and I've got to miss that. I wanted to miss those things. I wanted to play golf. Yeah.
Like missing my wedding.
I'm glad that popped up.
No, I've also
missed bachelor parties and weddings because of tournaments. So 100%. It is what it is at the end of the day. That's just an internal joke that
just slip it in there.
Yeah, it's here. That was we for the people, we made a decision to stay in the US because of COVID. We were scared that we might get in and get stuck in SA for some reason. So unfortunately that was a life moment that we missed, but he's still sitting there.
Yeah. But Eric, it was quite at that stage it was like that. Yes, like you didn't know if you were coming in or out. I mean, that tournament on Rand Park that had to stop the Saturday and the Sunday.
Was that the Joburg Open?
Joburg Open.
Same thing. Yeah.
Saturday it happened. Just they closed our borders and they said to the golfers they've got 24 hours or 48 hours to get into the UK.
It was 24 hours.
24 hours. That's it. I know that private planes were arranged to get some of those players in.
Yeah.
It's maybe just, if you don't mind, maybe that time for the COVID. I mean, you know, businesses all of a sudden, you know, we just didn't know what to do and what was going to happen. But in hindsight, what a time for golf. Certainly not dismissing any of the hardships that was felt all around the world.
Sure.
But give us a little bit of insight into COVID golf and when that happened. What did it do from a professional golf perspective?
Yeah, it was weird. Or as we all know, but all of a sudden, we didn't have any tournaments to play. Like I think we had a 2-month break on the PGA Tour. I was eating nets. I put up this net in our entryway so I could clip some balls into. My golf course was closed. Everything was shut down. So it was weird. And then thankfully, the PGA Tour started up again with no fans, which was also bizarre. That's
bizarre to watch.
Yeah, like, having fans there plays a massive part in it. The whole vibe, the atmosphere, you get pumped up when you're in contention because there's people, and it was just flat. It was strange.
And what happened with sponsors in that time? Did they feel the same way? Did they also not quite sure?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. I'm happy I'm not the commissioner of the PGA Tour with all that's going on now, but I'm sure there were some tough conversations that happened because from the sponsor perspective, they obviously put all that money in. You know, I'm talking corporate sponsors of this tournament. They put all that money in and they expect a certain product to be delivered, and now we can't deliver on that. So I'm sure that was tough. But I think in America specifically, the golf industry absolutely boomed during COVID because everyone could be outside. Memberships just filled up everywhere, so it was actually a wonderful time for golf to grow. And but yeah, you know, luckily for me, sponsors, they were all going through the same thing, you know, COVID wise so luckily they all stuck together.
And then in that particular moment, is your humbleness, your relationship that you have with your sponsorships, that then plays a vital role in that particular time?
Sure, absolutely. You know, we're all sort of sitting there holding thumbs, fingers crossed, when are we going to play again? When's fans going to come back? But, I mean, I've got some great sponsors, and, you know, the product that I wear or play with is one thing, but the people behind it, I think, is what makes it special. It's wonderful people. It's people that support me in my career, that understand like the injury I'm going through now, that understand that it's part of the sport, and they still support me. So that's what's awesome.
Yeah, I suppose the reason COVID is so surprising is because it did right around the world, Eric. Memberships in South Africa as well.
Yeah.
It just went crazy. Yeah. I know of oversubscribed clubs right now that just took the membership on during that particular time. Yeah. And it was such an accelerator for golf. And what I actually enjoyed about it is it felt to me like a lot of more everyday people came into golf. Yes. And just hear me out when I say that it's not, you know, because golf it's an expensive thing, your membership, all of that that goes with it to play it. It's a lot of time consuming game as well. Yeah. But it felt to me like it was just a moment where a lot of people just wanted to get back on into their field. And what I saw also grew is family memberships that grew a lot with it, because and to me that's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Because if your wife doesn't support the game of golf, it's very challenging to do that without her support. Then you've got a massive team around you. Mm-hmm. You know, just give me a little bit of insight. Just give us a bit of insight into your coaching team. Mm-hmm. And then also a little bit of a journey, if you don't mind, about Alex or Feely.
Feely, yeah,
my apologies. Yeah. No, Feely, because I also know he's a very good friend of yours. Yes. And how does that all work? And a caddy, so at what point, you know, because I know caddies you travel to different countries and then you sort of, but at what point does the caddy become fundamental to a player?
From day one.
Okay.
So it started with the first question. Team. So it kind of grew as my success grew and as I went through my career. And as I needed help in different aspects. So starting Sunshine Tour, didn't really have a coach. I didn't really have a coach to college, kind of self-made. Caddy kind of came along, you know, not really something I gave too much thought at the time, which probably in hindsight, I know a bit more now, but, you know, progress through Sunshine Tour, go play Challenge Tour, get through. And in 2018, I played my first British Open. And that's when I realized, I think I finished 16th that year. And I realized something's missing and I don't know if I can fix this myself. And went to see Doug Wood, and we've been together since, what's that, almost 4 years now, and we've done great. So Dougie came on board, started training, started working with Garth Milne. After I got injured with my back, started working with a lady called Tanya Kearney. She's a biokineticist. She's been great for me as well. I've obviously got management team, Mitchell Tweedy, who's in Belfast. He's my manager. Duncan McCarthy, who keeps the screws on the head right. Then obviously Feely and my wife Rose. People tend to perhaps not or to maybe overlook the role of my spouse or your wife or your partner. But the role that she plays is absolutely immense. Someone once asked me recently, if I didn't have Rose in my life, do I think I'd be where I am now today? And I can honestly say I don't think so. She's truly been the foundation of everything that I've achieved. But to get to Feely, Alex, his nickname's Feely. He's one of a kind. Arthur knows Feely as well. Feely played.
Crazy boy. Yeah.
He's
American. Yeah. We were college teammates, so that's how we got to know each other. We played for Minnesota together. He's 2 years younger. He played Sunshine Tour for 1 year. Was it 2015, I think?
Mm-hmm. How did he end up here?
He obviously wanted to turn pro. Okay. Well, he did turn pro. And then he saw, I think, the great opportunity that the Sunshine Tour provides and wanted to pursue that. So he lived with us for a year, played. He didn't play great. But regardless, he went back home to the U.S., I was playing European Tour at the time and I was kind of in and out of caddies. Relationship didn't quite work out. And WGC in Mexico was the next week and he lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, so it's close by. So I'm like, look, dude, I need someone to hop on the back for 1 week. He said, sure, no problem. Caddied for 1 week, called him after, said, do you want to do this full time? And he said, sure. So he's been on the back since. He plays an integral part in my success and the way we go about playing golf courses. He understands the whole picture. So, yeah.
And does he also have to have insight into that? Does the coaches and the mental coaches, is he part of that process? So he understands what you're going through?
He's part of everything.
Okay.
I think it's crucial because there's no point in Doug and I say we're going through a swing change, which we're not, but say there's something that needs to be adjusted, and for some reason I am hooking it and I've just got draws in the bag. There's no point in Feely not knowing what's going on, and there's a back right pin and he's suggesting let's hit this high butter cut fade. That's not going to work. So he knows what's going on. He understands this rehab process I'm going through. We just had a team meeting a few days ago. Everybody in the whole team is very much involved.
I want to dive into Rose's role, if you don't mind. And again, just from a perception that there's a lot of wives that he's going through that traveling at the moment. They see the sacrifices that needs to be made, or perhaps some of them don't. But what role, if you don't mind diving slightly more into Rose's role with you and why you say it was so imperative?
Well, to have someone next to you, you know, beside you, that my journey has become her journey as well. We met in college. She came, you know, left everything behind, moved to South Africa for me to play Sunshine Tour and to pursue professional golf. She caddied for me on the Challenge Tour for like 6 months.
Okay, didn't I?
So she's been there from day one. So when I have an off week or a few tough months, she gets it. She understands. She is 1,000% in full support of, if we need, you know, I'm struggling with X, let's get someone to help me with it. Babe, for the next week, I can't help with Valerie, you know, because it's the British Open next week. I need to get sleep. She shares in the downside of things. Like, we both were crying when I had to withdraw from the Open on Thursday morning. But at the same time, she shares in the success. So she's so heavily involved and so incredibly supportive. I don't know how someone would do it. If, like, take someone like Victor, what's Victor's surname on the PGA Tour?
Victor Hovland.
How much success he's had, and how's he going to meet someone that loves him for him? I think that'd be tricky. That'd be really tricky. So I'm thankful that I met Rose when I did, and for her to have made this journey hers as well. You know, that's what makes it so awesome.
She's part of the team. 100%. Pretty much.
She had so much patience with it as well.
Huh? Yeah.
Patience. It's not easy.
Patience and absolute belief in me.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I ask her a question like, do you think this is right, or do you think I can do this? There's never a doubt in her mind. And it'd be tough if my spouse was like, I don't think you should go practice, or I think we should skip this tournament because Chris is having a birthday party.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris, I'm skipping your party. And she's all for it. So her support and her belief in me, it's really a big driver.
Eric, has she ever told you the percentage of your accent playing a role versus your looks in her determining you the man? Has she ever been honest with you about
I'm not so sure about my Afrikaans accent being that strong anymore after living in the US, but definitely the first few days that we met, I think that accent definitely thickened a little bit. So it played its role when it had to. And it did the trick, obviously.
You dramatized that Afrikaans accent.
Do you like it foreign?
Yeah. Sorry. The rrr got a bit stronger.
I suppose the same question can be back at you, because American accent is also a very attractive accent. I don't know if it was for South Africans.
Which part of America?
I suppose.
I'm pleading the fifth.
Yeah, I suppose.
And she knows this. So, and thankfully, we've been married for a few years now. But I struggled that first semester, man. I couldn't stand it. I just wanted to, like, I needed to hear Afrikaans.
Okay.
And I needed to hear Like if it was English, South African English, I struggled with that accent. But now, obviously, I don't even hear it anymore when she speaks. So
yeah, no, we spoke Afrikaans before we came in here, and she seems to understand everything.
She understands everything, which proved the problem because I was like maybe 2 years after we got married or something, and she took some lessons and stuff, and I was skinnering with my dad. I think it was like a Valentine's Day thing, and I was like, flip, you know, moet ek nou weer freaking Valentine's Day gift koop. And she understand perfectly, and I certainly got the shots for it.
So you can't play that anymore.
That card's gone. That card's gone.
Why did you come back to South Africa?
To play Sunshine Tour.
Sunshine Tour.
Sunshine Tour, it begins here. That's the slogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally. But it's a competitive field.
100%. Huh? Yeah. You know, I was Windgat and probably...
You got that from the Americans, though.
Nah.
Not from you.
I probably... I really wanted to stay in the US. After college, I had this dream of Q School, BJ Tour, winning events, you know. It's probably a good thing that I have that self-belief, but my dad was the one that convinced me to come home and start Sunshine Tour and build your way up from there. So, and I'm really thankful he did, because it's a great place to learn how to be a professional golfer. And you're going to face a lot of obstacles. You're not going to like it. Some of the courses are not in the best shapes, and you've got to go out there and win. Whereas opposed to America, these courses are about as pristine as the fake grass in this office.
Yeah.
You know, like it is mint. So you've got, if you're a promising amateur in the US, you've literally getting handed things on a silver platter. So where in SA, it's different. And that comes back to our conversation with
South Africans
having to be tough and learning to deal with adversity and whatnot. The Sunshine Tour was where I learned to deal with that stuff.
But how important is it for the youngsters and for the guys, even if you're 30 and 40 years old now, how important is it to have a social media presence, an online presence? Is that important with sponsorship, or does your game do the work for you?
That's my belief.
Okay.
I've got a team of people that do a lot of my social media stuff because I don't want to hassle with it. I feel like it detracts from what I really want to do. But you look at Rory's account, I think he's got a little over 1 million followers. It's not because he posts cool content.
Mm.
Like, I'm not a content creator. You know, you can go follow certain
Rick Shields.
Go follow Rick Shields.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to create your content for you.
Yeah.
Man, I want to win tournaments. And through winning tournaments, the following will go up.
Yeah.
And with that, sponsorships will increase, yada, yada, yada. So, mate, if you ain't good enough, your content isn't going to sell you and get you sponsorships.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's vital, because that's a big struggle between profile and so forth. I will tell you this, that your social media account, which I follow, because I'm a fan of yours,
mm-hmm.
And because I look up to you,
mm-hmm.
it is nice for me to just get a bit of insight.
Yeah.
Because when you play, if let's say the field, the PGA field or Sunshine Tour field, if I met that person, I watch him completely differently on a Saturday or Sunday. If I listened on a YouTube video as an example, that interview as an example, you just watch him differently.
Yeah.
Bryson, to me personally, has done it very well.
Yes.
Where he's built his profile or his online capacity, but what I liked about his intent, it wasn't to get followers, because he didn't need that for the money. He's got the money.
Yeah.
He wanted to bring people on the journey. He wanted to show you what happens behind the scenes. He's at the moment building a performance studio there, and it's nice for me. And I will tell you this: what I saw in that is the hard work he puts in, which people forget. You know, the hard work that it goes in, 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, whenever that goes in. So he gained, for me, it's a nice platform to follow.
It's definitely part of his job description almost. Okay. He's I'm a professional golfer, but social media is part of that I know that he had a bunch of like professional content creator guys,
go around
TikTok guys, move in with him in his house.
Oh my word.
So it's a full-time gig for Bryson.
So your journey is, you know, focus on the golf and the game will do itself.
I think so.
I think 100% so.
And you know, at the same time, Bryson has been successful.
Yes, he's got credibility.
It's gone hand in hand.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you Joe Soap on the Sunshine Tour.
Yeah.
How much is the, you know, how much am I going to have to tweet or post every day on Instagram to get to 100,000 followers?
Yeah.
It's going to distract from what you have to do on the golf course, I think.
I might put you on the spot on this question, but now I'm a young golfer.
Yes.
I don't have credibility behind me.
Yes.
Because in golf, credibility comes with tournaments won.
Yes.
Ranking, consistency. So I don't have any of that. And I don't have money to travel. I need people to help and support me. How do I sell myself today as a golfer? How do I approach the corporate world, the sponsorship world? How does that work? Because, yes, when Christian Moss, when it's a tough question, that's why I wanted to ask him. There's two more that followed. But Christian Moss, he ranked first amateur in the Joburg Open. Hmm. I don't know if you remember that. Christian Moss, all of a sudden, okay, now we all know who Christian Moss is. Okay, he's got credibility. But I don't want to take away anything from the guy that put in 10 years of work before that to get to that particular point. Now, I'm a golfer. I put in the time. I really am with good intent. I wake up the right time. I put in the yards. But then I get to my sponsorships, and I know for a fact this happens. And they go, you just don't have enough reach for me to do anything
it,
with
it
you.
It happens big time on the Sunshine Tour.
Massively. Mm. So what? How do I balance that? And I'm not asking you from your personal experience, but what advice would you guide?
Well, you don't think maybe that's a nice way of saying that you haven't done anything substantially yet for me to commit to you?
Yes.
It could be that. I'm not saying that is it.
Well, I think we know the answer to the question that if he was the guy that finishes second at the Joburg Open or top amateur, then he would have the reach.
Yes.
So it's the chicken and the egg kind of thing for me. You know.
I hear you.
I didn't have the corporate sponsor. My dad paid for my first two events.
Yeah.
And that was petrol money and entry fee. And from there, I was on my own. Now, some kids don't have their dads to pay for the first three events. But if I didn't make cuts, that was end of the ticket, but go get a real job, because playing golf's not a real job. So
it shouldn't be the starting focus.
Also,
it should
Christian
be the golf.
Moss got into the Joburg Open because he was also good.
Yes,
he was a top amateur and he got in for that. So
he played himself into that.
Correct. So, but it's a tough conversation to have as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the corporate sponsor and you come to me and you show me your golf CV and something has to stand out. And to be honest, it didn't in my amateur career.
Yeah.
I didn't win SA Amateur. I didn't win SA Match Play. I didn't win World Juniors like Dylan. So I had to find a different way. I didn't get the corporate sponsors when I was coming back from college. Oaks didn't know who I was. Rightfully so. I don't know how I would sell it.
No.
Because you're not going to sell it with an Instagram post.
No. And I suppose it's a bit of a chicken and egg right in the beginning, you know, because your tournaments, once you win tournaments, I know as a corporate sponsor myself, once they get to that point, you approach them.
Correct.
You know, you want your brand to be associated with
Correct.
It.
Correct.
But what I also find, Eric, is there's also the when you meet the people, how what type of people they are.
Yes.
We attracted, as an example, to humble, grounded golfers. the success is not, I don't want to say secondary, but it plays a big role. But once I meet that person and there's something that you can work from, it changes it then for me.
Mm.
But that's where pro-ams come into place as well. So a lot of the local pros will play with big corporate guys that play in the pro-am and sponsor pro-ams. And, you know, that does help a lot for professional golfers.
Because that's your, call it your stage as the pro, to show them who you are, I guess.
And they get to know you, you know, meet you on and off the field, have a drink with them afterwards, you know, get to know the player or the profile of the person. And does he suit your business or does he, you know, or not? So I think that's pretty cool about pro-ams and events as well, where they can meet people like that.
And I know for players, and Eric doesn't have to say too much, but Arthur, you've also got experience. It's not their favorite thing. You know, you have to do a bit of smoozing, or 100%. You have to smile and wave a little bit. You might have a bit of an off day. He wants to chat 17 miles an hour, where you just want to focus on the practice round before the time. But it is, I'd like to hear your perspective on it, but the corporate sponsors are also putting millions into the game of golf. Yeah. And they don't necessarily have to do that. There's other alternatives.
Yes.
How do you bring, that's one format to bring people closer to one another, because it does come back to relationship as well.
One, I don't know if you want to comment.
Carry on.
100%. The reason I have a job is because it's entertaining. Okay. If it wasn't entertaining, people wouldn't watch. There'd be no corporate sponsor. I can't believe I'm getting paid to play golf. Like, so
we've seen you play. We can believe it, Eric.
Well, thankfully I can play. But the pro-am, there's been pro-ams that I've been a part of that aren't fun, because I'm at the end of the day, tomorrow I'm teeing off for the S Open or the Joburg Open or whatever the case might be. But you have to remember that it's these people that are providing me the opportunity to play. There wouldn't be a Joburg Open if it wasn't for them. You know, that is so key to remember.
And Eric, you, when you search your name, your mustache comes up as its own search. Like literally on YouTube, just by the way, and Google.
Can you just, does it need to does it need to make a comeback? Then, that's the real question.
Then number two is probably joggers.
But I cannot avoid the mustache question.
Sure.
I need to speak about this. I'll leave it to you.
What's the question?
Tell us about the mustache journey.
So
that's a December thing.
Yeah, it always used to be a December thing. So my grandfather, my mom's dad, had a stash his whole life.
Okay.
He said ever since he got out of high school, he didn't shave the damn thing. And it was proper. It was proper. So December's, just as a bit of like a chias, I would shave my beard and just have the mustache. And
I think we even had a competition one December. I failed tremendously. Came in second.
So
we won't have our pictures.
So that was always kind of just a fun, like a holiday thing. But for some reason, it hung on the start of this year. And before you know it, people are commenting on it and actually enjoying it. So it stuck around for a while. My wife got tired of it. She got tired of it. She prefers the beard, but I don't know. Maybe it needs to make a comeback, eh?
Yes, I tell you.
So. You think so?
Yeah. But the PGA, the Sunshine Tour, you know, as an amateur golfer, because you guys are professionals at what you do. You know, you and Arthur's relationship goes back years. Arthur is a professional at what he does. He deals with golf on a daily basis. So to us, we see these tours as such foundational tours. Mm. You know, that's done so much for the game. And the funds behind it, the effort that goes into it, you know, the, what the Sunshine Tour is doing at the moment is just they're going through incredible growth, in my opinion. I believe there's great energy that's in there. You've got the PGA. Now, I'm just talking about a golfer sitting on the side. It's this it's almost this dream, you know, the PGA. I know that it was a big part of your dream.
100%.
You pursued it with all your might. And everything that I read about you, you kept referring back to that's where you want to be, yes, and where you want to end up.
Yeah.
You then got your card. Mm-hmm. I believe it was just after Mexico. Am I right?
I finished well in Mexico. It's really interesting how it worked out. So I obviously got into the WGs because my top 50 ranking.
Okay.
And they count towards PGA Tour FedEx Cups.
Just points. Explain to us what WGC
stands for, World Golf Championships.
Okay.
So the tournaments were born from the idea of we want to have a tournament that attracts the best players from all around the world, from all the sanctioned tours. So Sunshine Tour gets, I think, one spot.
Okay.
Asia, Australia, all the sanctioned tours get spots, yeah, into these tournaments. And then finish fourth, I think. Was it fourth? Third or fourth? And a lot of points, you know. And then COVID hit. So everything came to a standstill. And I was on the cusp of finishing top 125 in the FedEx Cup. Got a few invites again on my ranking, and then got my card that way. Yeah.
How did that work? Did you get a phone call? Did you get an SMS or a
no
WhatsApp?
High five, no, no, it's just, you obviously see the list. You can see the points list. And if you finish top 125 when the playoffs start, which was a week ago, that's it. You are exempt for the next 12 months on the PGA Tour. That is it.
And
awesome. Awesome feeling. It's different from winning a tournament, because winning a tournament, like when you make that final putt, there's like the fireworks that go off inside, all the hard work that's gone in. Yes. Where this was like, I don't know how to describe
almost
it.
Almost in silence? Or
a little bit in silence, but there wasn't that like amazing moment as well. It was just
like it's almost a sigh of relief.
It's a sigh of relief.
Because it's a whole long thing.
It's a season long thing, yes. Correct. But yeah, it's. I was pretty proud.
Who did you phone first?
I don't remember. My wife was probably there. I don't remember where I was. My dad would have been up, like he would have been one of the first I called. My wife, my dad.
So now you've got your PGA card.
Arthur wasn't on that list, by the way.
Say again.
Arthur wasn't on that list.
I've gone to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning watching this, like, get the ball in the hole. But we did chat when you won Barracuda.
Yeah, when I won. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
That was intense.
So you've got it, and I will say this, you've made the most of it, mm-hmm, since you've got your card. But you're a top 100 player, Eric. How incredible is that in the world?
I want to be top 50.
So that's your next journey
and
goal.
And then I want to be top 10. Yeah.
And you still got a lot left in you, huh?
Yeah, I think I'm just getting started, to be honest. But, you know, I think you're so right that at some point you have to pinch yourself and look back at where you've come from, hitting balls on Wurschko Oetzerings hockey fields with my own shag bag of balls and to where I am now, and then being
a PGA Tour winner,
being a top 100 player in the world. It's easy to just put the next goal in front of you the whole time and keep chasing it, and forget to sit back and appreciate where you've come from and what you've achieved. It's really cool.
Is there a sigh of, for a moment, you go, all my support, all the sponsorships, mm-hmm, the wife, the dedication, the sacrifices, and it's almost a giving back to them as well that we've done it?
Yeah, 100%. I had a conversation with my dad the other day. You know, he was the one that, like I said, we live in Oudtshoorn and got up at 4:30 in the morning, drove to Knysna for a tournament, Southern Cape event, or to East London, wherever. He's the one that drove me around. And so we had this conversation, looking back and the journey that we've been on. It's really special.
So I just want to quickly use a quote, you're always pursuing better.
Mm.
What does that mean to you?
It means that I have this absolute determination to reach my full potential. And it's not like there's a ceiling. There's no roof. I don't know where it is. But no matter what I do, whether it's being dad for my little girl or husband to my wife or friend to this oak, I don't want to I want to do it to the best of the ability that I can. I want to be a cracking mate. But then with my golf, again, I'm not going to leave one stone unturned. If that means that certain sacrifices need to be made, I'm fully prepared to do that. And I think that's what that means. I want to see how far I can go. I want to see how much I can squeeze the juice and get everything out of this.
You know, perceptions that everybody's creating about, you know, life and how beautiful it is, where actually it doesn't really work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke about brutal honesty between yourself and Alex.
Mm. Yes.
And I really enjoyed that. If you don't mind just elaborating for us, because it's not just about the honesty. It didn't just catch me about the word honesty. It stands so out in this world at the moment.
Yeah.
Honesty versus fake perceptions and...
fake perception, instant gratification.
Yeah.
So, Feely and I are also close friends. And when... we went down the path of, you know, him getting on the bag full time. That was a discussion because how else is going to affect our friendship? I'm technically now his boss. I'm the one that has to write his paycheck. And but at the same time, he's one of my best mates. So that becomes tricky. So we just set the rule of like, no matter what, I don't care how tough the conversation is, if you have to fire me or if we're talking about financials and he wants a raise, because he's a pushy bugger. he always says, well...
that's why he is where he is.
Yeah, he always says, well, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, you know. if you don't ask, you won't know. And so our rule was just from the start, absolute honesty and clarity. That pertains not just to the golf, but off the course as well. So what's great when that's our baseline is that on the course, if he says something to me or if there's a disagreement, I know it comes from a place where he wants the best for me, whether it's in that particular shot or whether it's a long-term decision that we need to make. I know where it comes from. So we are open and honest with each other. It's tough sometimes. It's tough conversations. It gets personal, but we both know that it's with the intent not to hurt, but to make each other better.
Arthur, you told me about a story, Eric can choose whether this stays in, but just give us a little bit of insight.
Oh,
you went and you went and carried for him at some stage, and then you guys had some brutal words or honest words.
Oh, this is a tough one, but
send it.
I think, Feely was obviously expecting his first child or second child.
This was first baby.
First baby.
Yeah.
And Eric needed someone at DP final, and my hand was up for that. I think that would have been a cool experience. For me, it was a crucial time for him, so I wanted to do everything in my power to do the job and be there for him.
The reason it was crucial because I needed to finish top 10 in that tournament, DP World Finals, to remain in the top 50 in the world.
Okay. To get into the Masters.
To get into the Masters. So obviously cut off for the Masters is end of the year, December 31st, and then like 3 weeks, I think, before, like in April.
So it was a very sensitive time, but, you know, we were there. Hopefully I did the job to the best of my ability. I honestly gave it my utmost. And I think we did solid, solid for the 4 days, but there were some ups and downs mentally on the course that week, and it was a tough week. Everyone wanted it bad. You know, the whole team wanted it bad. I think there was an expectation on his shoulders as well. For that sure. was huge. And I think we were, I think it was on the third day, walking down the 14th fairway, and all I was hearing was cuck the whole time out of his mouth. And I literally said to him, I didn't travel all the way to listen to your cuck the whole day. If you want to talk cuck, go talk cuck to yourself. I'm done. Let me go to the ball and let's get...
We all need that answer.
Let's carry on with it.
Thank you for the braveness you had that day.
It was a sense, because also I'm his friend. But yeah. At that moment in time, I was in job mode. You know, I didn't care what he thought about me at that moment. Yeah. I wanted what's best for him. And I think he had a 4-iron to like 10-foot putting for eagle. And I think he came to me, patted me on the back, and he's like, Arthur, I needed that. So 100%. I think that's also the honesty factor that Feely brings all the time. I mean, there's no bush unturned.
No, correct. Yeah, 100%. You know, I remember that week, and I feel sorry for Arthur because I'm a hardkoppige okie. Boersen. And things got tough, and it was the end of a season. I came off an injury. That's the first time I hurt my back, and needed this top 10 quite desperately. I think we finished 14th in the end, like one or two shots out. But so he was getting the worst of it from my end, unfortunately. And I'm happy that he drew that line in the sand and told me his real thoughts.
It was a cool experience. I even said to you when I was nervous as hell, and I think we played with Louis the first day.
Yeah.
And I said to him, so how's your company doing, Louis 59? And his caddy looks at me, he's like, what are you talking about? Because it's Louis 57.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Felt like the biggest twist. But I was just talking cuck, and I was trying to make small talk with Louis, and it Shame. Just didn't, but anyway, it was a good week.
It is Louis 57, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, in towards the end of us, where we, it's so important to surround yourself with the right people. And I don't mean that in a cliche way, that really love you and care for you, because then that honesty is easy. Joe Rogan on one of his podcasts said it to me the absolute best, where this one guy was just spewing off stuff. And he was like, your friends are allowing you to get away with that. Your people that you surround yourself with, when you make statements like that, they allow you to get away with that.
Yeah.
Where your real friends will go,
what are you doing?
What are you doing? That's not how it works. Ons praat mos nie so met mekaar nie, of ons praat met mekaar so.
Correct.
And ek voel meer as ooit, hoe ouder ek word, and the older I get, I only draw myself to people that can be brutal and critical to me, but they come from a place of love. And I want to say, not just a place of love, they've earned that place of love. You know, they've been with you for a long time. They've shown you the ups and downs.
Mm.
So when you are that moment, and that's probably why I said to you, you needed that.
100%.
But Arthur, I also want to encourage other people. When I said thank you for being brave in that moment, because I don't think we are brave enough. I think people don't want to be as honest as they normally can. They want to make them sound much better. You know, I'm come from quite a basic school, so I can't sound very clever. So I think that helped me a lot in my life, that I was never taught, I never had the ability to perceive things in a different way than just what's in front of me, you know, and the practical part of it. Eric, this has been, I can carry on forever, but well, I know there's a wife.
You know, just last thing on that, Serena Williams, I had a conversation with someone. My wife actually told me about it, and so I don't know who she had the podcast with, but she spoke about her obviously incredible career and the amazing things that she's achieved, but then how tricky it was to navigate relationships and the difficult boundaries that you had to put up with people. And at the end of the day, your inner circle gets small, because there's only a few people you truly trust. When you reach that level, and I'm not at, you know, I don't know if I'll ever achieve the things that she has achieved, so I'm not trying to compare the two, but there's a small part of, I know just a small part of what she's gone through, with regards to people thinking they can help and people you don't know that offer advice. At the end of the day, you need people like Arthur, the relationship we have, Feely, Rose, and that circle becomes small. And it's small because we're honest with each other. I always know what's going on between the two of us. He's got full, go ahead to tune me at DP World.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with our friendship, man. Yeah. Give it to me, you know. So that's important in life.
And I suppose Aubrey also plays a big role for Feely, for Alex in his life, the same way as Rose.
Correct.
Play for you.
And Raylan for you.
And Raylan, of course. Yeah. I mean, she plays also an active role in True Fit and in the businesses that are there. And I'm really grateful that you gave me the opportunity to speak to you about these things today. I know some of the topics is to other people that might be, you know, everyday stuff, but the family that's behind us, the woman that supports us, my wife's also involved in the business, Eric. So I know and I understand how it feels to be able to go out there and take the world on in what you want to do and then have that beautiful support behind you. Thank you that you stay so humble for all of us South Africans. I mean that from a big perspective, because we spoke about it earlier. You don't know how much you mean to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's also your humbleness. You know, Arthur and Marie has a very similar ability, you know, in their own life and their own world and how much influence that they carry. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bring a responsibility back to you, but thank you for doing it with so much class and allowing, you know, everyday golfers like myself to make it accessible, somebody like you and what you want to say, and to listen to your story and relate that back to us. Because I don't ask you about your wife so that we can tick a box of family questions.
Sure.
I ask about your wife because of the role she plays.
Yes.
And that you cannot speak about Eric van Rooyen without mentioning your wife.
Not at all.
That's, therefore, she doesn't sit here as the golfing hero that hits the clubs, you know, that's going to take out your 7-iron. But she sits just as important to us as a hero in this conversation.
Yeah.
And because it's tough today, guys. You know, life is very different than it was 30, 40 years ago for our parents. We carry a lot more stress. I think the world has exposed itself a lot deeper in the last 3 years of what it really is. And I feel now is the time for honest people. And I don't mean honest, because Arthur says it all the time. We're not perfect. We don't get it right all the time. But for you to open up your heart to us this morning is going to inspire other people.
Mm-hmm.
And also just take the, and I don't want to say superficially fans that you have, but people that look after you. And if I say, Eric, when I commit on a tour and you're playing, you know, I'm staring at you as long as the cameras allows me to stare at you. It's a little bit, if you think about this, it's a bit like ridiculous for a moment. From a Thursday, somebody watches you play and hit the golf stick.
It's silly.
Till the Sunday.
Yeah.
And we cancel shit around us.
Yeah.
No, it starts at 3, so I can't be there. I can't be there at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it comes down to, yeah, we've got you. Right in front of us. Yeah. And I just want to show people and allow me, forgive me for going on a bit here, but people just to see it's possible.
100%.
And the support structure, you know, that's around you, where you guys were watching videos in a bed, you know, queen bed. we'll say king bed for the podcast.
I was the one that put the pillows in between, just to let people know.
Apparently, we all men know the pillow dividers.
Yeah.
You know, but thank you for that, and Arthur for the inspiration that you've also played, and that it shows loyalty is also important in what we do, because here you guys are so far down the line.
Yeah.
So the youngsters that are going through this at the moment, don't embrace it. Change your mindset. It is, you get to do all of these things. Right. You know, it's not a work. It's and I don't mean it in a, you, if you just change that mindset, you know, what you've gone through and the stories that a lot of players have wasn't when they were at their most successful. It wasn't when they made all the money in the world. It's not when they signed their first big sponsorships. It's normally the stories they remember the best, and what they never want to forget is when they had nothing.
Yep, when they started out, yeah.
You know, when friends, that because those bonds only gets created under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for also from all South Africans, Eric. And we bless you and your whole family and Rose on every journey that you're going with. Thank you. All the support people around you. I'm not going to speak like I know them, but for everybody that's around you as well. Here you are, Eric. There's billions of people in this world. Né? People lose their lives every day. People make lives every day. But here you are. In the top 100, this is your blessing, and we get to have a moment with you through this journey. Yeah. So I feel so grateful, and I wish my dad was here this morning on a very personal note, because he would have not stopped talking about this for the rest of his life.
No, Albert, thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully I can continue making, you know, South Africans proud on my journey.
Oh, we are all right behind you. Thank you, Arthur.
No, it was great. It was great to have him. Yeah, it's nice to have him in SA and talk some cuck.
Yeah,
share a bri.
Have a bri, do the normal things and get back to the basics, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to, because this is a playing forward, you know, this is what we're trying to do at the show. Youngsters must listen to this. Be humble, be respectful. And I don't mean you have to subdue yourself to the world, you know. That's also not right. But be yourself and make sure that you stay humble at what you do.
100%.
And don't ever think, you know, you are better than anybody for any moment, because I think that's a far better organic growth in any sport or business that you do. It's why I am personally so fond of Arthur and Marie, and why I look up to their business and what they've done is how they handle their treat their customers. Yes. The way that you guys speak about them, you know, Arthur, that to me is very attractive and very grateful also for this morning. So thank you very much. And all of us, we pray for you, Eric.
Thank
we
you.
We bless you. And we most certainly vuvuzela you on a weekend.
On the next major.
On the next major.
On the next episode of the Human Golf Show.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, for any brand out there is to grow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think for Titleist, Titleist is tour validated. Titleist started as a golf ball company.
Yeah.
And has grown to be number one in everything.